be in Romans chapter 15. If you have a Bible and you're going to turn there, you're like, wait, what? But it's a good introduction. Today what we're doing is introducing this series, about 12 weeks. We're going to study the book of Romans. It's going to be a bit challenging, like I said, for me, certainly. And you have the opportunity to allow it to be challenging for you. We're going to talk about some in-depth things, some theological things that Paul raises. But today what I really want to do is just introduce the book and sort of talk about what it's really about. First of all, our goal in the series is to understand the book of Romans, to get the message of what Paul is saying. Small group leaders, I sent you a bunch of questions out yesterday. If you didn't get them, let me know. But what we'll be doing is in the small groups throughout this series, some small groups, will be discussing these questions. I'll have them out every week. You can access them. They're online, and you can use it to reflect. You can use it to discuss as a family or form your own group and just talk about these things, which will help us all as a group to understand the book of Romans. Now, a lot of people say Romans is like a dissertation. It's a doctoral thesis or some kind of thing, and that's intimidating. Let me just go ahead and relieve you. It is not that. Romans is a letter written to a church in a particular time and a particular place. We can grasp it, so don't fret there too much. Second, our goal is to live according to what we learn. This is a little more challenging. I'm going to go ahead and let you in on the secret. I think these are also Paul's goals in writing the letter in the first place. He wants to teach people the truth. We're going to talk about that a little. And he wants them to live like they believe it. And I think this is hard because, let's be honest, as human beings, I think this is a universal truth, especially as human beings that are Christian. If someone were to say, what do you believe? And we were to explain it, and then they would just follow us around for a week, a month, maybe even a day, and watch us. At the end of that time, I'll bet you anything, and I think this is probably true for every single one of us in here. If it's not, talk to me, because I need to learn from you. At the end of watching us, they'd go, do you really believe what you said you believe? Because you don't really act like it all the time. And I think that's true in general. So I want us to know the truth, understand what this letter is about, and I want it to actually affect us. That's our goal, is just to give it away right at the beginning. And I want to just do this introduction, what it's about. We're going to do a little who, what, when, who wrote it, why did he write it, when did he write it, and all those kinds of things. But also I want to motivate you. I think we also, as human beings, we have this thing where it's homecoming, right? So I'll go to homecoming or kickoff or end of camping Sunday. I want to motivate you because here's what I believe in my heart, and I was just thinking about that this morning. Commitment transforms us. Commitment is what we need. We are consumers, and as consumers, what we want is give me, give me, give me, and we go around and we get the best from all everywhere. What I really want to motivate you to do is to come every Sunday for the next 12 weeks. We got two services. So you can make it. It's also online. You can get this. I want to motivate you because I want to show you that it's worth it. That's what I want to do this morning. It's not that we want to just learn something, but that we want to be so changed and transformed, and we value what's at the end of the road. So there you go. Those are my cards. And we're starting with Romans chapter 15, verses 18 through 29. That's going to be where we begin. So if you got a Bible and you're flipping there, go right ahead. It's going to take me a second myself. These little words. All right. It's easier here. All right, here we go. Chapter 15, verse 18. For I will not venture to speak of anything except what Christ has accomplished through me but to bring the Gentiles to obedience by word and deed. If you're like, wait, what's this? I'm going to explain it. By the power of signs and wonders, by the power of the Spirit of God, so that from Jerusalem and all the way around to Illyricum, I have fulfilled the mystery of the gospel of Christ. And thus I make it my ambition to preach the gospel. Not where Christ has already been named, lest I build on someone else's foundation. But as it is written, those who have not been told of him will see, and those who have never heard will understand. This is the reason why I have so often been hindered from coming to you. But now, since I no longer have any room for work in these regions, and since I have longed for many years to come to you, I hope to see you in passing as I go to Spain, and to be helped on my journey there by you, once I have enjoyed your company for a while. At present, however, I am going to Jerusalem, bringing aid to the saints. For Macedonia and Achaia have been pleased to make some contribution for the poor among the saints of Jerusalem, for they were pleased to do it. And indeed, they owe it to them. For if the Gentiles have come to share in their spiritual blessings, they ought also to be of service to them in their material blessings. When I have completed this and have delivered them what has been collected, I will leave for Spain by way of you. I know that when I come to you, I will come in the fullness of the blessing of Christ. Let me pray. God, help us to understand this message, these words, the point, and what this is all about. And even more importantly than understanding, help it to actually affect the way we live. Help us to live according to this truth. It's in your name. Amen. All right, so first of all, I wanted to kind of talk about this because it gives us a little insight, you know, into who's writing and what's really going on in his life, and so we can kind of understand the situation. First of all, Paul wrote it. Very few scholars dispute this. It's kind of like, you know, if you think aliens helped build the pyramid, you might not think Paul wrote Romans. But it's pretty serious. People believe that. Now, here's the thing. Who's Paul? What do you know about Paul? You might be here and you're like, wait, my uncle? Who's Paul? Well, I want to give you a little bit so you know who Paul was. I think we need to dwell on this because have you ever opened somebody else's mail? You can say it's by accident if you want. But you open up somebody else's mail. Maybe it's written by somebody you don't know. You don't have the context. And so you're like, wait, you don't quite get the message. So that's why I want to do this. I want us to understand the guy that wrote this so it makes a little more sense to us. We can sort of understand the message. So Paul had a massive conversion experience. It's the only way we can understand it. I'm going to give you a little into his background. Romans 8, chapter 1 says that there arose on that day a great persecution against the church in Jerusalem. We just read this is where he's getting ready to take some money. Against the church in Jerusalem, this is earlier, way earlier, and they were scattered throughout the regions of Judea and Samaria. Saul, which was Paul's former name, was ravaging the church and entering house after house. He dragged off men and women and committed them to prison. Acts chapter 9, verse 1 tells him he was bringing them bound to Jerusalem. This was a guy who was literally on a murderous tirade. This is Islamic State stuff. He was killing Christians. He was kicking down doors. House to house, it says, literally, kicking down doors, literally dragging, is the word, dragging Christians out of their homes and taking them away. He was doing this. We're told in another place they killed this one guy, Stephen, and it says that there behind them as they killed him was Saul, holding their coats and approving. He was a murderer, a vicious tyrant, and he underwent what can only be called a conversion. In one place in Acts chapter 26, he describes it himself. And he says that he heard the voice of Jesus say to him, "It is hard for you to kick against the goads," in the midst of this experience. You know, I read that and I'm like, wait, is this a word that didn't get moved from the King James Version? I don't know what a goad is. So I had to look that up. And some of you might know this. If your grandparents used these instruments in agriculture, but when you're steering oxen, apparently, to plow a field, they have this stick with a pointed end, And they use that stick to just sort of poke the oxen a little bit, to sort of steer, to make the oxen turn this way. Oh, I'm getting poked on this side, I'll go that way. That's what a goat is. Now, here's what would happen. The oxen sometimes would get frustrated by it, and they'd kick back. And it would drive it deeper in. So it was hard for the oxen to kick against the goad when they were trying to be steered one way. Jesus had been chasing Paul. Jesus had been saying to Paul, go this way, and Paul was kicking. And Jesus said, it's hard to kick against the goad. And Paul's life radically changed that day when he encountered Jesus. He repented, he changed, he becomes a preacher, an evangelist, trying to grow more of the communities that he was intent on destroying earlier. Some of us know that kind of a drastic, dramatic conversion experience. Some of us don't. It's not necessarily something you should expect, but it does happen. I met a guy once who was a Christian, he was a pastor, and we were talking, and he said, oh yeah, I used to be a really bad heroin addict. And I said, well, how'd you get clean? And he looked at me, and the way he said it, I was like, he said, I became a Christian. And I thought, at first I thought, well, that doesn't seem, I mean, come on, that seems a little judgmental to those rest of us that still have struggles in our lives. And then I realized, but, you know, God can certainly, absolutely, immediately transform an individual or a character trait or something about us right away in a moment of conversion. For me, it wasn't that drastic. I had my temper. Some of you heard me say I used to have an awful temper. I broke my hand on a kid's face once in the 7th, 8th grade. I don't even remember why. And it was bad. I just fly off the handle, almost black out. The moment I became a believer, absolute transformation. I think I've lost my temper one time. And since then, I mean, I've gotten mad, certainly, but to just lose it doesn't. Just that's one thing about me that changed. Now, some of us get that type of story, and others of us don't. So what we can do is celebrate for others when we see it, and we can also hope for ourselves. So I don't want you to think, well, I must struggle, I must not be a Christian, I must not be converted. But I do want, I think the story of Paul begs this one question. Am I kicking against the goads? What areas in my life is Jesus trying to steer me or push me toward? What is he trying to say to me? And I'm not doing it. And then I think we need to ask, do I want to keep doing that? Am I finally going to just stop and give in and do what Jesus wants me to do? Because it is hard. So that's Paul. Drastic conversion. Now, situation. He is now a passionate preacher. He's been traveling around a little more than a decade around what we now know as Turkey and Greece. That whole area, planting Christian communities, starting churches all over that part of the world, and of course in the process battling the sin that he sees in people that he is ministering to. And one of the primary things, and this is throughout the New Testament, which the same guy, Paul, wrote very much of the New Testament, everywhere he talks about this issue, there's this division between these people we call Jews and these people we call Gentiles. And that's what's referenced here in what we read. And just so you grasp this concept, the Jews trace their ethnic history back through Moses, who wrote a lot of the Old Testament, to Abraham, the guy who was the first one God said, hey, I'm going to use you to make the world better. All these guys trace their ancestry to Abraham. They had all the Old Testament. That was their stuff. Gentiles actually is where we get the word, this same Latin root that we get the word gene from. Literally, Gentiles just means other nations. That's all it means. Ethnic groups. Genes. So you have two groups of people, the Jews and everybody else. That's what's being talked about here. Part of the reason they're having this division is because the Jews think they're a little better, right? And the Gentiles sort of feel that. They feel that tension. Basically, I think many of us get this. We've seen it. It's basically racism is what was going on back then. And that is happening. And I want you to see verse 25. Paul says, At present, however, I am going to Jerusalem bringing aid to the saints. This is what's happening right now. Paul is spending a winter in Corinth, where he planted a church. He's writing this letter that winter while he's staying there for the winter, and he's going to be going off to Jerusalem in the spring with this offering. He's mentioned this offering in other letters and other places. This was more than about helping meet a need. The offering came from Gentiles, and it was being taken to Jews. The offering was a way of saying, you know what? We're one. Despite all the racial issues, despite all the disunity, we're one, and we want to help. And it was a way for the Jews to say thank you to those that they had some tension with. Paul, this treasury, this offering was way more about money and finances. It was all about unity in the church. That's what he's thinking about. As he's writing this letter, that's what's on Paul's mind. In fact, he's been working for years to get this offering together, to bring this about and bring about unity and healing within the body of Christ. That's what's on his mind. We'll see how that plays in. And the audience. So we talk about Paul, talk about the time, what's going on, the circumstances of writing it. Now we're going to talk about the audience. Who is Rome? What is this? He's writing it to the church in Rome. Now Rome is the economic, cultural capital of the world at this time. It's like New York, Los Angeles, Tokyo, and Paris all rolled into one. You know? Everything important came out of Rome. Rome's everything. And at the time that Paul wrote this, probably about 58 AD, it was about a decade after this emperor in Rome named Claudius. This is really cool, so pay attention. Claudius had expelled all the Jews from Rome. If you were a Jew in 49 AD, you had to leave Rome. Christian or otherwise, didn't matter. If you traced your ancestry back to Abraham, get out. Because, and this isn't in the Bible, this is in all these other records, because of the rioting caused by a guy named Crestus, which is Christ. Here's what's happening. The Jewish Christians and the Jewish Jews are fighting about the Messiah, Jesus. Can we really believe that this is true? What these people are saying happened? He died and he came back to life. Come on. They're rioting back and forth, and the emperor's like, I'm sick of you guys. Get out. And so they had to leave. In the interim, the Roman church took on a very distinctly Gentile tendency. No longer any Jews bringing the balance back. And so the Gentiles are like, yeah, you remember those Jews, how they were mean to us when they had the power. See how the racism, the disunity in Rome begins to take hold. That's what's going on in Rome at the time that Paul writes it. Gentiles in control, still mad at the Jews for thinking they're better than me. So now we can talk about why he wrote it in the first place. First of all, it's this disunity. That's always on his mind. He's always dealing with that. And what better way to build unity than by a shared agreement of what is true? Remember we said our goals were? Understand the truth. Mutually agree upon what is true. And then live according to it. So Paul is writing to this church in Rome. They may not really grasp the depth of the gospel. And so he's writing to them to say, this is what this is all about. Don't you guys get it? And then live like you believe it. And so that's why he spends a lot of time in this book talking about what we'll call redemptive history. We'll talk about that. But if you ask anybody with a like Sunday school education in Bible memory, you say, well, tell me a verse from the book of Romans. Some of you know one. You can go, oh yeah, I know this one. Probably, I'd say 80% of the time, the answer is going to be Romans 3:23. It's a key verse, you know, in the first part of Paul's argument. It says, for all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Now, I think if we had an MP3 track instead of Greek hand letters that Paul actually left us, then I think what we'd hear is, "For all have sinned." I think he'd stress that part because he knows that he's writing to people who have been hurt. They've been hurt for years. And he's writing to people that have hurt other people, sometimes just to be mean, and sometimes by accident, and sometimes because they were hurt the first time. And he knows that that's been going on, like flaming arrows back and forth between these groups of people. And he says, "For all have sinned." Now, here we got to sit. If we're going to really get the most from the study, if we're going to learn from today, if we're going to learn from Romans, if we're going to change, if we want to grow in our lives, we've got to hear this. Because this is the key to the disunity that Paul wants to deal with, is because we either don't believe this, or we just don't live like it. For all have sinned. See, when someone hurts us, we act surprised, don't we? Can you believe she said that? I can't believe he did that to me. Well, we just, it says for all have sinned. Why are you so shocked when you get hurt by another human being? It's part of reality. Everybody you love has the power to hurt you. It hurt us. It's a hard reality, living life in community, but it's true. And you know what? Sometimes we will. So, first of all, don't be shocked when you get hurt by someone that you're in community with. And second, I think that Paul, what he means to say by this, "for all have sinned," I almost hear behind that phrase, "Who do you think you are? To hold a grudge. To be angry at someone else. Don't you know that for all have sinned?" You and I, we've sinned against God Almighty. We've sinned against other people all around us on a regular basis. Who do you think you are to not forgive somebody? We long for reconciliation. We want things to be right. But it's hard, isn't it? It's hard to seek that reconciliation because in order to find reconciliation, we say one of two things. We have to say what I did was wrong, or we have to say I forgive you. And that both of these come with assumptions and they can be humbling. To say what I did is wrong is to assume what I'm saying is I'm not enough, I'm not perfect. There's all these sorts of things that we're saying when we say what I did was wrong. If we say I forgive you, what we're saying is I'm not going to hold that against you. No one has to pay for the way that you hurt me. And that's hard too. They're both very difficult, but they're both necessary if we're going to live in unity. Like I believe Paul is calling the Roman church to. Now, here's the problem with both of those assumptions. When we say, I was wrong, you know what we're saying? We're agreeing. We're agreeing to what we've already said, for all have sinned. Of course I was wrong. See, when we believe the truth and we live like it, it frees us to say, well, of course I was wrong. All have sinned. I'm sorry. I am sorry. I wish I hadn't done that. But neither of us should be surprised that I'm a sinner. Because we believe this truth to be actually a fact, that all have sinned. So there's that. But then also, when we, the assumption that if I say I forgive you, it means, you know, I'm not going to let that, I won't hold that against you, nobody has to pay, that's wrong too. Because if we refuse to forgive, and this is one of the hard ones, but when we refuse to forgive, what we're really saying is Jesus didn't die for that. So sometimes in order to understand the truth of the gospel and in order to live by it, we need to allow Jesus Christ to die for our own sins and the sins of others instead of trying to do it ourselves and make them do it. And that creates unity. Because we're no longer trying to be better, prove somebody else, hold that against them. We have the gospel, which we'll be talking plenty about the next 12 weeks. Paul's second purpose in writing is mission. In verse 24, he's, I hope to see you as I go to Spain. Paul's mentioned this before. He really wants to get to Spain. It's kind of the corner of the empire, the end of the world at this point. And he wants to go to Spain and preach the gospel to people there. He is about mission. He's consumed by mission. It's all he ever thinks about is mission. In verse 20, he says, I make it my ambition to preach the gospel. It's my single focus. That's what I want to do. All of Paul's life, he is about changing the world for Jesus. Now, one thing we're going to see as we study this, and you've heard me say this a lot, is that God is changing the world. Again, he's about a lot more than just getting us to heaven. He's about making a difference right now. This redemptive history, this thing that Paul talks about through most of Romans, is a story. It's one you've heard me say. It's a story about, well, every good story has, you know, a conflict, a climax, and a resolution. Something like that. You English teachers can correct me later. You may. But essentially, a story has this movement. And in this story that Paul is telling or retelling, he's pointing out to the people that, you know, the Old Testament, a good chunk of the Old Testament is conflict. It's showing you the problem that we have, the man's problem, all of us, our shared desperation in the face of God. The climax of the story is the life, death, resurrection of Jesus, the cross. It's the moment when those of us that have been reading the story real carefully, how's this going to get solved? And it's the moment when Jesus raises from the dead that everybody reading along goes, oh, relief. And then the resolution is everything since then. The cleaning up, if you will, the fixing all the things, tying up the loose ends. Paul lived in a day, and we live in a day, when God is making things new again. He's tying up the loose ends. And this is always, this story has always been the focus of Paul's mission, his passion. It's what he does when he's building tents, which was his day job, or preaching the gospel. He's trying to make the world better. He's working along with the God of the universe who makes all things new. And when he's building these Christian communities that he's building, that's his thought. I want to build a community of people that will work along with God and show anybody watching what it looks like to see a living, breathing God who is making things new, fixing what is broken. So, that's not ever changed. In 2,000 years of history, God hasn't stopped his mission, and the mission of the church, and this church, is still to fix things that are broken. So let me ask, how are you going to be a part of that this fall? What are you going to do to fix what's broken? You may simply need to forgive somebody or ask for forgiveness. That right there demonstrates that God can fix and restore human relationships. You maybe just need to invite a neighbor to church. I posted some statistics on a Facebook this week. 86% of people who come through the church doors come because of a personal invitation. 86%. So all the mailers and all the stuff we can do, 86% of people that come through are going to come through because you invited them. And 37% of people, us, 37% of Christians point to a connection with a church as pivotal in their conversion to Jesus. So I don't know the numbers. I'm not good with stats. I've never been. But that sounds to me like, I don't know, 20% or so of the people that you ask to come to church, one in five, will be eternally changed. Correct me later, mathematicians. I know that's wrong, but it sounds something. It sounds right to me. Okay, maybe you need to get in a Bible study. The ladies' Bible studies, the Wednesday small groups, there's small groups that meet Sundays. There's lots. You can log online. You can find them. Go to our website. Go to sign in. You can find Bible studies that way. Get in one. Maybe that's what you need to do. Make yourself new. Maybe you need to serve right here. Serve for the first time in the church. Or maybe again. So that's one. There's booths in the back. See one? Go to it. Sign up. Serve. Take a step. That's what the challenge is. We want to find out, where's Jesus goading me, and am I going to go? And maybe you just need to serve in the community. Myrie is happening again. We have a great partnership with the school right over the hill. Serve the teachers, we serve the students, we serve the community in various ways. You can plug in there. You can Freedom Fellowship. Maybe you want to go to that. You'll hear more about that. There's lots of opportunities to serve, not just here. We're not about making us a great place to hang out. We want to change our community. Maybe that's what you need to do. How will you be a part of God's mission this fall? We're called to a story with transformative power, power to heal relationships. We're called to a community that will love us and know that we're equal parts saint and sinner, all of us. We're called to a community that will love us despite our sin. It's a beautiful thing. We're called to that, and we're called to a mission, to join with a God who is making all things new. That's our calling, and that calling is real life. That calling is beautiful. It's awesome. That's what we're made for. Anything else we can do is just living half-heartedly. It's not real life. Romans is about changing lives through the truth of the gospel. That's what God is about, and that's what we're going to be about. That's where I want to go, and I want you to come with me. And so, instead of closing today with some advice from Paul, I want to close in the words of Andy Dufresne from Shawshank, when he said, "Get busy living or get busy dying." Let me pray. God, pray that we will seek real life. That we will stop being satisfied with all the counterfeits. That we will follow what we're really called to, which is risky and dangerous and terrifying to our souls. Unity and mission. God, help us to live faithfully to what we say we believe. And I pray over this series that we will learn more clearly what it is we believe. It's in your name. Amen.